Hey, movie lovers, you can enjoy Real Nerds Podcast in many ways. You can go to our website, realnerdspodcast.com. There you'll find articles and the podcast. You can go to our YouTube channel and you will see the Real Nerds Pod Show. We're also on Blue Sky. Hey, did you know Facebook is still a thing for people? Yep, we're on there too. We are also on Threads. There are many ways to interact with us. All our film adventures are posted on Instagram. If you have a social media account, you can find the Real Nerds Podcast.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
just
can...
Just talk film! Sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will turn out all the gods. Lights, camera, action!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another awesome episode of Real Nerds Podcast. I am Ryan. I am joined by my friend, my pal, my amigo, Brad.
What up?
Oh, he's representing. Yeah. I don't even know what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's not me.
Every week we see a new movie and we podcast our experience to the world. This week we saw Mercy, starring Chris Pratt. Stay tuned where we'll recommend the film or not. Play the trailer, then we'll spoil it. We'll talk about. We'll also talk about nerd news and movies we watch throughout the week. We watch movies. We also play video games. You got a Switch 2, Brad?
Was that this week?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, cool. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I finally did it. I was worried that it'd go up in price. They scared me into it, and yeah, as I expected, it's solid upgrade of the existing Switch I have. I was also worried that when I played Minecraft on the Switch 1, mm-hmm. it bricked it. Like, I think it bricked it because it has like mods and things.
Yeah.
So I want to keep playing Minecraft, but I don't want to lose like my replacement Switch that Nintendo gave me.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I can play all these other games on the other one.
Yeah.
So, and it's fun.
I found that my Nintendo systems, most of the games I buy from are all first party games.
Yeah.
And then for PlayStation, obviously Sony puts out good stuff, but I see that I kind of branch out a little more on my PlayStation. But yeah, it's a huge upgrade. I won fantasy football is why I got mine. Because it's, you know, the system price wise isn't too bad, but I really wanted Donkey Kong and that I won fantasy football in, it was $300, so basically got half of it. You know, I think that was a fair compromise. So, yeah, I've been playing the hell out of it, and I updated the expansion pack. So I got all the Sega Genesis games, which I grew up with a Sega Genesis before I got a Super Nintendo. So it's been really fun kind of playing Earthworm Jim and games like that. And, you know, I'm always shocked when I play games from 8-bit, 16-bit era, how hard they are.
Mm, yeah.
The Disney Afternoon Collection is DuckTales 1 and 2, Rescue Rangers 1 and 2, Darkwing Duck, and Tailspin. And I remember when I was young, I only played Tailspin a couple times because it was one of those games when I played it and I always went, you know, fuck this game because it's a pain in the ass. So when I was playing the Afternoon Collection a couple months ago, I was playing Tailspin and the controls are a little weird. B and A change the way Baloo flies, so from left to right, and then up and down makes him go up and down, and or maybe A switches and B fires, one of those ways. It's really, you don't think it'd be complicated controls for two buttons. So I played it and I beat it, but it took me like almost 2 hours because they have a rewind feature on them. But I try really hard not to use them.
Yeah.
And I almost threw my fucking controller through the screen because the last boss is literally this plane that just spins around and shoots bullets that just fill up the screen. So the only way you're going to beat him is total luck. And when I ended up beating him, it was total luck. I just happened to make Baloo inverted at the right time. And I happened to get in the middle of the pattern it was doing. And so I was able to beat it. And I've never felt so accomplished beating a game for a long time.
Honey, get down here. See what
yeah,
I did.
Yeah, I did. And she's like, what the fuck is this? I don't care. It's like, I remember when they released on the Switch the Nintendo 16-bit ones. And so it was Aladdin and Lion King. But it was from every console. So it had Super Nintendo and Genesis. Which was interesting is they made different games back then because they're different developers. And I love the Genesis Aladdin. The NES one's good. SNES, because it's made by Capcom. So it kind of has almost like a Mega Man feel to it. But the Genesis one has great music. And I was flying through the levels like, oh, man, I love this game. And then I got to the Cave of Wonders. And I fucking hate that game because it is so insanely difficult.
It's like The Lion King.
Oh, yeah. Like
that one level. I guess yeah, a lot of games have that one level.
Yeah, because The Lion King is escaping from Pride Rock and at the hyenas. And
then you get to Scar and you're like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? They're like, yeah. I just keep hitting him and he doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it's been really fun. And I love Nintendo's library that they've put on the expansion pack. I started playing Wind Waker 2, which is my favorite Zelda game. And just, you know, that game, the music.
It's not in HD, though.
I know, it sucks.
Like, they put out an HD version.
Yeah, for the Wii U. I keep on hoping that maybe they'll do a Wii U expansion.
Yeah.
But the music in that game is so great. I always love to Link when he's surprised in that game. And his eyes get really big and, like, beady. Just, I don't know, there's something about that game that really charmed me. I know you're, Breath of the Wild kind of guy, but...
Yeah, an Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Wind Waker's good, too. I just haven't played in a while, but... also, me getting it also coincides with the Virtual Boy release.
So I'm excited
to play those again. So like, the real one I have, the lenses are out of alignment, so it doesn't, like, work properly. So I'm excited to be able to play them again.
If I remember right, so the original one has to do with mirrors, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I was wondering, do you think they're using the 3DS technology in it now?
I think so, yeah.
Because I always remember that was really impressive. I mean, I still have my 3DS. I remember getting that and playing Super Mario 3D World and just being in awe that you didn't need glasses. It didn't really hurt your eyes, and you could play a 3D game. And it was always a trip because if you held it and you moved your head, it would get that blur effect because it's 3D. But if you look on it the right way, it always looked really cool. So, yeah, Nintendo, hats off. I mean, it's a really fun system, and I can't wait to see what they do going forward. You know, the thing with Nintendo is they always say they do those Nintendo Directs. And, you know, just like Mario Tennis, I think, came out 2 days ago. But, I mean, in a month. And but you see the Nintendo Direct, and they go, coming next month. Mario Power Tennis. I was in my head, wait, the big game's coming out in a month? So they must do something where they want to make sure the game's done, and then they kind of start, you know, pushing it out.
Yeah.
But yeah.
They're big on quality control.
Yep. You need that Nintendo seal of quality. I mean, they put it on a lot of games, but, you know, at least you knew you're getting something. This week, Brad, we saw Mercy. Do you recommend Chris Pratt's latest?
Not really. I said online it's like watching an entire season of 24 in 2 hours.
Yeah, that's a pretty good way of describing it.
It's all like the similar beats. I did get to see it in IMAX 3D. So the 3D was cool, but I guess I just didn't really like care that Chris Pratt was in danger. he's kind of pretty unlikable.
Yeah, I thought so too.
As a character, I was just kind of like along for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big special effects extravaganza. But yeah, there's just like a lot of plot points that are convenient, and I think it's probably a little too showy at spots. Like, it's just like too much spectacle. you know, if there's like that amount of, like, there's so many just like civilian deaths at the end. I'm just like, yeah. Like, the police are doing a terrible job.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. You know, it's funny you say that, because in my review, I said the exact same thing. Because I actually said hats off to making the hero, quote unquote, unlikable, because it is kind of a different. Because, you know, they set it up that he's wrongly accused, and as the story unfolds, you find out that he's just a total prick.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting. But I saw it in D-Box, which is Century's version of 40X, but it's not really. It's just really a chair that vibrates. So you get basically a massage, which is cool. Yeah, I was never that. But see, the thing is it wasn't as compelling to me as a 24 season.
Yeah.
And I think, and it's nothing against Chris Pratt. I like him, but I think there's something with Jack Bauer that makes it cooler. And as my profession, they trample over people's Fourth Amendment rights a lot. And usually I can forgive it, but they're constantly, we're going to access your phone. We're going to access everything you're doing. We're going to access this. And you can do that. And, yeah, it doesn't really work that way. But I mean, I guess there's a better way to, there's a worse way to spend 2 hours.
Yeah. It's also an alternate future where, like, you know, this whole program has been designed out of necessity for, it also seemed like a commercial for like normalizing, like, hey, cause I never really felt the end that like the AI was a problem. Like,
no,
you kind of end the movie being like, yeah, actually, you know, aside from this little incident, this like technology that is actually pretty useful and we should probably keep it. Signed, Amazon Studios.
And here's the trailer for Mercy.
I got this.
We're 1196 on that possible hit-and-run SUV.
Officer down! Stay with me, Ray!
LAPD, stay where you are!
We got a runner! Go, 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 go!
My name is Detective Christopher Raven. We live in a world where murderers walk free, in a justice system bogged down by red tape and human error. That all ends with Mercy, a judicial system powered by artificial intelligence with access to every camera, cell phone, and database. If you commit a capital crime, you have 90 minutes to prove your innocence to an AI judge, or you will be executed.
Detective Raven, I'm Judge Maddox, and this is the Mercy Capital Court.
Hold on, just wait a second.
You're before this court today charged with the murder of your wife.
I loved my wife. I didn't hurt her.
If you are innocent, prove it.
I need us to walk the scene. No, I have something here. We gotta go old school. That's a bomb.
Get me out of here!
You're running out of time.
Wow. Thank you for that. Bring that back. Pause. Play it again. Can you find out who that is?
Do you want to uncover the truth? Even if the truth is dark.
Do you honestly think that I killed my wife?
I think there's more that you're not revealing.
That's right, man. Maybe they're Amazon and Bezos are trying to, you know, hey, get ready for this happening. We don't want any shit from you guys.
Yeah, just accept it.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, in it, Chris Pratt plays some dude who wakes up in the Mercy program, which is this AI judge who gives people 90 minutes and access to anything they want to prove their innocence.
Or they'll be executed.
Right then and there from some sound wave thing. I don't understand what she's talking about.
I thought it was lethal injection.
Is it lethal injection? Yeah. I thought it was like sound.
Maybe. The brown noise.
Yes.
You shit yourself to death.
You shit yourself to death. So he has to prove that he didn't kill his wife, And, you know, when I'm watching it too, I go, man, that's really shitty. His wife was murdered. She, I mean, I'm, they're trying to, I guess they're trying to make her a bad person for having an affair, but he was so detached and he was an alcoholic and abusive that I was saying, okay, maybe she just needs love from someone. And the daughter with the burner Instagram account, and it was just a lot. And so he's there trying to solve his wife's murder.
And he starts off by doing the typical, like, I don't know, he seems like a smart guy, but mm-hmm. he should know how his own program that he designed works. And he really, like, I don't know, doesn't...
I know, he just gets mad constantly.
Yeah, like, he should just go straight to... Like, what he eventually does is when he finally starts investigating the crime scene, like, you think he would just, like, jump straight to that if he was innocent. But no, he does that whole, like, I shouldn't be here and blah, blah, blah.
A lot of the stuff reminded me of the Batman Arkham games where they would scan blood patterns and they go, oh, there's a fingerprint.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess they had, you know, Batman's computer. And, yeah, it's hard to even say more about the movie because literally it's Chris Pratt sitting in a chair and then stuff happens around him.
Yeah.
You know, the drones. I think it's interesting because if the AI program was just interested in doing the right thing, then why would it also only fall on the person to prove their innocence? Because in it.
Yeah. Later in the movie, she kind of says, like, you know, I can't openly do this, but if you know, I unlock this door, if you happen to walk through it type of deal, then
yeah,
like, she is helping him out but, like, being coy about it.
And the guy killed his wife because his brother was wrongly executed, so, but why do you have to kill the woman? Like, what did she do? You know, well, I guess she's exposing him to whatever drug they were selling or whatever they were doing. I don't even remember.
Yeah.
But at the same time, so that's what I mean. So she'll open the door, she'll help people, but she had footage randomly from this one camera from Chris Pratt's partner who took the knife or the gun that killed that one person that put the first person to death in the Mercy program, and it shows her throwing it, like, into off a bridge or whatever. I go, how is that camera exactly right there? And they're able to,
oh yeah, his partner,
find it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like an unnecessary twist.
Yeah, because, I mean, I could tell you that traffic cameras, they don't keep records that long. But anyways, it's...
good to know.
Yeah, it's... because, dude, they also had footage of her in the evidence room, taking the evidence out of the evidence room, and then throwing it off the bridge. That's what I mean. If the AI program is aware of this, because it has no feelings, and it's the point of it is to only...
Like, long ago, before Chris Pratt's even kidnapped, the AI should be like, hey, by the way, one of our officers just stole exactly a bunch of evidence out of the evidence room.
Because isn't that what it's designed for? Because she keeps on saying, the program keeps saying it's all about justice and doing the right thing. But as an AI program, they don't have feelings. They're just trying to solve, you know, it's like a math problem. This plus this happened and equals this. So when the AI program is saying, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't add up, and this is why, because it doesn't have feelings, but the homeless guy who's thrown in there doesn't know how to fucking use it? Surprise. Yeah, I don't know. There's some cool moments, like the action's kind of cool in it, but it's constantly dragged down, I think, too, by some bonehead scripting and... very convenient stuff happening.
Well, the way they let that whole truck drive through L.A.
and
like, killed all those civilians. Like,
I mean, eventually, when you just take it out, I mean, I get that.
Or just not pursue it. Like,
well, it's
so
gonna crash
directly
into a building and kill people.
Yeah, but like,
yeah, I mean, as
if you can take it out, like elsewhere. Like,
yeah. Well, that's what I mean. I mean, you have a duty to stop something if it's a threat to people. But yeah, I mean, I would make a more concentrated effort. And I mean, there's always that moral dilemma. There's an innocent child in there. But do you make a play and try to stop it? opposed to it running over all those people and then crashing into a building and blowing up a building. I think you would probably try to stop that truck.
And also, couldn't, like, they knew it was going to the AI building.
Yeah.
Like, couldn't they just, like, let's just evacuate it and let them crash into it.
Yeah, evacuate it and then just put a bunch of police there waiting for it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it is what it is. So, yeah, there's a, I don't know, some things just, I mean, actually, I think Rebecca Ferguson was really great in it. And I mean, she's really nice to look at. So her face always up there is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I liked her more in Mission Impossible, but, but yeah, that's Mercy.
Yeah.
If it is.
It's all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that stuck out to me is just like, yeah, it's Jack Bauer and his wife. Someone killed his wife and kidnapped his daughter. And
where's the mountain lion?
He's a, like, law enforcement. Yeah. Yeah. Where's the mountain lion?
Yeah. Why is that show like on 4K and put out?
Right.
It seems that that's what it's made for. Yeah. Because, man, that show's been, how long has that show been off the air? 12, 13 years now?
Since 2014, I think, was the last little miniseries.
Yeah, miniseries. Damn.
Yeah, over a decade. Yeah.
Yeah, fudge.
But yeah, it's in HD on, like, network programming, so.
Yeah, Hulu has Buffy, too, in HD now. Just put out discs.
Yep. Give me the discs.
I want them. I want them now. Hey, here's the nerd news for the week.
It's real news!
My favorite Spider-Man artist died this week. Sal Buscema, who drew my favorite run of Spider-Man, actually, ever. I've wrote about him a few times on our website because I think he doesn't get the props he deserves. He drew Spectacular Spider-Man for... Oh, man, I couldn't even tell you how many years. It's over 100 issues. And my favorite run is... it starts with this little six-issue arc called The Child Within. And it deals with Peter Parker, Harry Osborn, and the Vermin dealing with their childhoods. Peter Parker being an orphan. Harry Osborn never living up to Norman Osborn. And always being a disappointment, which leads him to take the goblin formula, which makes him a junkie and mentally unstable. And then when I was younger, I never got this part, but Vermin is a half man, half rat. And the reason he's so vicious is he was sexually assaulted by his dad. And this Child Within arc explores what happens to children when they're faced with these things beyond their control. You know, I mean, it's not Peter's fault that he's an orphan, and it's not Harry's fault that his dad is so demanding of him. And it's not, his name's Edward. It's not Edward's fault that his dad sexually abuses him. And the last issue of it is so well drawn, and it starts with Vermin breaking into his house and almost killing his dad. And his mom comes downstairs and says, you know, what are you doing? Why are you doing this to your father? And Vermin says, you let him do it to me. And you're just as guilty. And so he starts attacking his mom, and then Spider-Man stops it, obviously. And then Vermin kind of gets squashed or, you know, defeated. And he's mentally, you know, has mental health issues, obviously. But this isn't a fucking comic book.
I was going to say, like, kids reading.
Oh yeah, when you're a kid, you have no idea. It's cool. Spider-Man's fighting Vermin, Green Goblin, and then Spider-Man goes out and Harry are fighting, and then Spider-Man takes off his mask and he sits there. He says, I'm not gonna fight you anymore, you can kill me. And then Harry Osborn can't do it, and he's pissed off, and he puts on the goblin mask. He says, I'm gonna kill you one day, and he flies off. Then Harry Osborn comes back, and he's put into the thing called the Raft, which is their form of Arkham Asylum. And so that's issue 189. And he says, you know, I'm going to come back and I'm going to make your life miserable. Issue 200. Harry Osborn dies, and the last four pages, and this is why Sal was such a great storyteller, is you can read all about it on J.M. DeMatteis, who's the writer. He originally had dialogue for Spider-Man and Mary Jane. And when he got the pages from Sal, it was so well told through just pictures, he threw out all the dialogue. So it literally, the last four pages is Harry Osborn is going to kill Spider-Man. And he saves Mary Jane and his son because they happen to be in this townhome that Harry Osborn owns, that where Spider-Man and the Green Goblin were fighting. And Mary Jane, the last form of the last balloon of dialogue is she says, "You just left Peter in there to die?" And so Harry goes back in as the Goblin and takes Peter out. He comes out and they have this little exchange where Pete says, "You came back and saved me. You're not like your father." And he says, "Yeah, you're my, like, trails off best friend." And he collapses. And then Spider-Man's in the ambulance and Harry Osborn dies. And then Spider-Man comes out and Mary Jane's there with little Norman Osborn, his son, Harry's son. And the only thing is drawn is Spider-Man puts his hand on Mary Jane's shoulder. She starts crying. And then Spider-Man covers his face because he starts crying too, and that's how it ends. It's beautiful. And he's always been my favorite artist, and that he passed away is... I just wanted to honor him because... I have an original art from him that Andrew got for me. Remember when we used to go to Coins, Cards, and Comics, and Andrew always hooked us up? Yeah, so the one I have is Spider-Man's fighting this mutant guy called Banjo, and the art's really cool, and it's from 87, and you can see the whiteout and stuff, and then there's little notes on the side that says make the webbing thinner, so it's really cool that they don't really do anymore, because the one right next to it is Terry Dodson with Mysterio and the White Rabbit, and... And, you know, now they just digitally add the word balloons.
Yeah.
Back then, they drew all the kabooms. And so it's just, I mean, he lived to be 90, so he had, or 89, so he had a great run. There's a great book with him being interviewed. And all he says is, you know, I drew a lot because I could draw fast. And so everybody really appreciated that at Marvel. And he had a run on Spectacular Spider-Man. He did the Defenders when they first came out. And his run on Incredible Hulk is legendary. But I love him for his Spider-Man. Sal Buscema, make sure you pick up some of his stuff. I think you can actually get an omnibus of... It literally came out 3 or 4 months ago. And it's 1,200 pages. And it's his run from, I want to say, 160 all the way through 226. So it's 1,200 pages. It's $150, but... If you want to get some good Spider-Man stuff, it's a really underrated Spider-Man run. And that's my rambling of Sal. I'll miss you. He inked a lot lately because he loved inking as his one passion. And so he didn't really.
It's a tracer.
I'll trace it. Chalk.
Your dead fucking body.
Mine all of your fucking body. Obviously, because he's getting older, he couldn't draw a whole comic anymore. But he inked quite a bit, so
he's inking in my mouth.
Honor Sal, pick up some of his comics. These are films we watch throughout the week in a segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So this is the stuff we've been watching.
Brad, what'd you watch this week?
Well, I guess this is the week I went to Sundance.
Oh, that's right, you did go to Sundance.
I figured it's coming to Boulder, so it's easy for us to just stay here and see it next year. But I was like, you know, I'll see what the Utah experience is like. And man, it's a pain in the ass to get around. They have this like bus system that, I don't know, they had like midnight screenings that got out like as the buses ended. So that wasn't fun.
So also help me with, because when I saw the drone footage of it, it looks like it's in a valley, and it doesn't seem it's that
Yeah, it's
accessible
like
to people.
There's this inclined Main Street, which has the Egyptian Theater and the Marquee Theater on it, where most of like the high profile stuff happens at. Although nothing happened at the Egyptian this year, except for Bill Engvall. But yeah, it's pretty much it. It's like most Colorado mountain towns are, you know, there's like a lot of like Cherry Creek style shops mixed in with old mountaineering type stuff. But a lot of screenings that I took, went to see were like down the mountain, near like the supermarket and stuff. And the first thing I saw was Mysterious Skin, which I forget what year it is, but it's like an early 2000s movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it. And it's like super fucked up about this these two kids that are molested by their baseball coach. That happens, and then cut to years later, the two kids have grown apart, and they're not, they don't remember the event that well. And the one wants to, one of them wants to track down Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, because he thinks that like the event was them communicating with aliens. He doesn't remember it as being like a molestation, but Gordon-Levitt's character does. He becomes like very sexually active as an adult, and prostitutes himself. And so yeah, the rest of the movie is kind of jumping back and forth between the two, as Gordon-Levitt's character spirals into just like crazy sex and stuff. But it's the reason it was at Sundance is because they were highlighting a bunch of like older significant films, and this one in particular had a full like restoration done, like new color grade and everything. Yeah, they were kind of showing that off, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt and the director had a Q&A at the end, and I actually recorded it.
Really?
So I think I'm going to do a bonus episode with like all the Q&As instead of putting them in like a huge episode.
Yeah,
like this
cool.
One. So look for that in the queue soon. But the cool thing at the end was he was talking about, because also his first film, I guess, was A River Runs Through It, which he attributes Robert Redford, who just died and is the founder of Sundance, as for kind of like getting him into his career. And on the set of that, Robert Redford gave him a baseball bat, with the Ty Cobb bat.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He brought that to the Q&A and showed us and had like a beautiful speech about filmmaking and like the impact of the Sundance Institute on film.
Well, he's a filmmaker in his own right too. How many films has he directed? I'm not sure off the top of my head.
I just remember Don John.
Yeah.
But probably more. But yeah, he had a good speech that you'll be able to hear.
Very cool.
And then the next thing I saw was, but like all the screenings were $40, by the way.
Really?
So they were, yeah. I mean, I wasn't that surprised, you know, Sundance, but,
can you not buy a pass for it? Or it's probably,
yeah, pass is like over $1,000 to just like see anything. But the first thing I went to see, like the whole trip revolved initially around Richard Linklater was doing commentary over his new film Nouvelle Vague, which is a dramatization of how Jean-Luc Godard's Breathless was made. So it's like a reenactment of that whole process. And the guerrilla filmmaking of it. But like the screening was set up to be like he and another filmmaker were going to comment, like live commentary over the film. And I was surprised, like the screen was really small, big audience, small screen, and the audio wasn't great. They would often have like the movie audio the same level as Linklater. And, you know, it's like being in a theater and like hearing people talk around you. And eventually they finally got it figured out to lower the movie audio, but then Linklater's compensated by lowering his voice, so it didn't fix anything. And then throughout the rest of the film...
And Linklater's probably says, oh man, I should maybe not talk so loud now that the movie is balanced right.
Yeah. Like you finally be able to hear him, and then you just like drop down to talking like this. about the film and all the stuff behind the scenes about what's going on. It's like, speak up, man. So that was kind of a bummer. And then the last thing I saw was probably the best thing I saw all weekend at the midnight screening. It was called Rock Springs. And it's about, it's a horror film about these Chinese railroad workers. And this is based on a real event in Wyoming. Rock Springs is like a stand-in for the real town. The white workers went home early and they came back later and slaughtered the Chinese railroad workers. And so the movie jumps between time. Benedict Wong is in it, as well as other familiar Asian actors. But Asian mom and her daughter move to Rock Springs, and then they find like a relic of this event. And then it jumps back into time, and it shows you like the whole slaughter and them trying to escape all these killers, and then it like jumps back. But like the cool part is the relic, like the bodies of the dead railroad workers, like morphs into like a substance style creature that like terrorizes.
So it's like a monster film.
Yeah.
Sweet.
In the past and the present.
Hmm.
I did fall asleep.
It's like your point. That's your go-to is falling asleep in theaters.
It was like midnight, yeah. And I stayed up for the flight and everything, so yeah. For like a low budget horror film that's based like on it's like tragic real life event, it's pretty cool. And I also have that interview, so you can hear the director talk about her inspiration from the event and like, you know, processing it into this like different thing. So that was probably pretty like the best thing I saw.
Cool. It sounds cool.
Yeah. And the monster's cool. The effects are pretty good. It is kind of slow, but it was cool.
Sweet.
And it's like the only new thing I saw. A whole festival of new stuff, and that's like the only thing I saw. So yeah. So that's my Sundance stuff.
Thinking really hard over there.
Yeah, well, one of the other things I saw, we're going to see 3 weeks from now, so I'll skip that. And then I guess I saw Dead Man's Wire.
Now, what is that one?
So Bill Skarsgård is like it's based on like a real life, like the guy kidnaps a banker and then calls DJ. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw like a trailer for that, and I said, oh, when is that coming out? I didn't even know it already came out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's already gone too. And that was interesting. The thing that blew me away is like Cary Elwes is in it, and I didn't realize it until the end of the movie. Like, he's unrecognizable. Oh, wow. Yeah. Like, his credit came up at the end. I was like, where was he in this movie? And then I looked it up and I was like, he was that guy? Wow.
That's awesome then.
Didn't look like him, didn't sound like him. It's crazy. But during the movie, I was like, this seems like a part that, like, they wouldn't give to an unknown actor. Like, it seems pretty important. Like, who is that guy? But yeah, it's about this real life guy who got screwed out of a bunch of money by this financial institution. It's run
weird.
By Al Pacino. Yeah, right. It's like, I think it takes place in the either early 80s or late 70s. So he creates this shotgun with a noose on it that you can't get out of without getting your head blown off. And so he kidnaps this guy, brings him home, parades him in the cop running the show that day. Am I morphing two different movies? Oh, yeah, I am. I was thinking of the Sugarland Express for a second. It's like a hostage negotiation thing. The guy they kidnap, his dad is Al Pacino. He runs the bank, but he doesn't want to apologize for anything or admit guilt on the financial shit he did. So he throws his basically son to the wolves. I don't know. It was interesting. It wasn't like super compelling. It was a little bit like Dog Day Afternoon, with like the whole media circus around it.
Yeah.
But like the movie's framed in like a 4:3 aspect ratio and like degraded. So it feels like really like watching something from the 70s or 80s. It's like a really back and forth of like, you know, who's really the villain here, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I guess I also watched, have you ever seen Bug?
Is that the Ashley Judd one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have.
What did you think of it?
It's all right.
Did you get it?
I haven't seen it in so long.
Yeah.
So I can't, I know, man, I can't, I know she's, aren't they like sequestered her and her husband or something? And I vaguely remember the film. Yeah. I know I've seen it.
It's based on a play. And when you figure out like the way the trailer,
you can spoil it. Cause I've seen it. So
yeah. Well, the way the trailer makes it seem like a horror movie, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But
it's more of a drama.
Yeah. When you, it's really like this drama to like show, it's really prescient for today of like how someone like with conspiracy theories can like influence other people and bend them to their will, which is what this movie is. So Ashley Judd is living in a motel. Harry Connick Jr.
Yeah.
Is her abusive husband, ex-husband or boyfriend. He gets out of prison and shows up and like harasses her. And Michael Shannon is just like a wandering dude. He like, I think he's a former Marine. So he tries to defend her and they kind of like hang out in her motel room. And then eventually it gets around to like him sharing like his thoughts on like, he thinks he's like being infected by bugs.
That's right, man.
Yeah.
I haven't seen, when did it come out? 2005,
I think.
Yeah. It's been that long since I've seen it.
But yeah, like back then I saw the trailer, like, oh, horror movie, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, seeing, yeah, Michael Shannon basically hallucinate these things and like convince Ashley Judd, because she's like, you know, sort of attracted to him and kind of wants him to be like this good guy and savior to like solving all of her problems. And so she goes along with all these things and you just like watch her be like, go from an like independent person to like depending on him and going like in accepting his delusions.
Yeah.
And then you basically watch them spiral into like destroying themselves through this delusion.
Cause yeah, it slowly devolves. I remember that it just kind of basically, you know, a snowball that keeps falling and is really, it's, I didn't really get it, I think, back then. And yeah. I know it's kind of,
I know I wouldn't if I was just been like, oh, that was a shitty horror movie.
Yeah, I think it's gotten kind of a cult status now.
Yeah. It's having like a Broadway play revival or something. So it's coming back around. But the more cerebral part of it, I was like, oh, that's actually pretty interesting. Because it's freaky, like production design wise.
Yeah.
And everything towards
the
end.
Maybe I'll rewatch it. Like I said, I couldn't even tell you. I know she's in it. When you said Michael Shannon, I was like, oh, I didn't remember he was in it. So,
yeah.
Probably because I didn't know him back then.
Yeah, it's like one of his first roles. Yeah. Because he was mostly a stage guy, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What'd you watch?
I watched a few things too. I've been trying to be better about all these films I own and watching them. I know. So
you haven't watched all these?
I'm getting better at it. I did have that 321 that I hadn't watched, and I think I've knocked about 100 or so off of it. So I watched Troll. Did I talk about Troll last time? I can't even remember.
I don't think you did.
Yeah, so because I'm trying to pick up where I left off. I mean, it was only a week ago, but for some reason I can't remember. Troll is
different from Troll 2?
Different from Troll 2. And I didn't know this, but I bought the Scream Factory Troll 1 and 2 that comes with a DVD of the best worst movie ever, the documentary they made on it. And, I mean, I've had it probably 10 years, and I finally just decided to watch it. And I didn't know that it's been out of print for so long that it sells for tons of money, which is weird because Troll 2 has been released again, but I guess Troll 1 has not been released since that double feature.
Yeah, I think of the two, like Troll 2 is the one that's,
because it's so infamous.
Yeah.
And so,
which one has Julia Louis-Dreyfus in it?
That's Troll. So yeah. I didn't know she was in it, but her husband is her husband in the movie too. Because they've been married that long. I think they've been married for almost 40 years.
Yeah.
So good for
Met
them
on SNL.
Yeah. I love Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I think she's one of the funniest comedians of all time. So yeah, she's in it briefly and she kind of prances around naked in it. You really can't make out anything.
Oh, darn.
I know. But it's directed by John Carl Beekler, who directed Friday the 13th Part 7. And the actual troll looks really cool. You know, I'm a sucker always for practical effects because I think the artistry that goes into them and the mechanics that work the face is really a lost art because now it's, we'll just CGI it. You know, even zombies and stuff on TV shows or in horror films now, they'll do basic appliances, but then they always put the blue dots on them because they're going to add more to the zombies. But it's they're in an apartment. This troll gets out and switches places with this kid's sister. And it's really fucking obnoxious.
Like wears her skin or something? Or
no, he has this ring where... I don't even know. She goes into the laundromat of this apartment they're moving into. And then the troll's, I got the key in my pocket. No, he's a... he just shows up and he uses his emerald ring to transport her to some magical world. And he morphs into her. But she becomes this little obnoxious little fucking shit. And the movie's really obnoxious. And all the characters are hyper... what's the right word? They're basically exaggerated versions of people. So there's this hyper awareness to the film and the film isn't really well made. And I think John Carl Beekler is an incredible effects artist. As a director though, he leaves a lot to be desired. You know, I always, his Friday the 13th, I think Jason looks the coolest in it, but his directing never leaves anything ambiguous. It's always, oh, I'm going to show you Jason before Jason does anything. So there's no suspense in it. He does a kind of the same thing here where the effects look really cool, but that's about it. There's a witch that lives in the building that knows about the troll. I don't know what the fuck's going on. It's dumb, but I give it an extra star instead of one star. I give it two because I think the makeup effects are cool in it. And I'll always fall back on that when I watch a film because that's where the redeeming quality for the movie is to me. It's not in the performances or, you know, shit like that. So yeah. And the making, they have the Blu-ray is actually really great. Besides Troll 2, which, I only watch a little bit of it. So I'll have to watch the whole thing. It's kind of hard to get through, but, Troll has, it's like a 50,
you don't piss hospitality,
a 55 minute hour long making of. And it's really cool that's why I love Scream Factory and Vinegar Syndrome is they take these films that probably don't deserve this kind of attention, but that they give this attention. You know, I always think back, I know it's a joke with the Patton Oswalt, the bed that eats people, but there is people that really worked on that and they did try their best. So I always think it's fascinating watching them talk about the film and no one really says anything bad about it. Everyone says, oh, we had fun making it. And, you know, I think actors and writers and directors, they understand that maybe it's not the best movie, but it has its place. So it's kind of cool watching that and that they gave it an hour long retrospective documentary is fun. On the total opposite of that, I mentioned it before, I watched Star Wars, A New Hope with my son. And it's been so long. I mean, I usually watch them every couple years, but you kind of forget how really good that movie is because of how big Star Wars is now, and how little it was. You know, it's hard to think about it that way because obviously I only can watch the special editions of them on 4K, but there is this glimmer of a small film that became this phenomenon. And it's really cool when Disney Plus has some really cool documentaries about Industrial Light and Magic. And for the Star Wars one, you know, Steven Spielberg helped direct a scene and they're showing all those guys and it's really cool. And just watching the film again and why Darth Vader is so cool and how well they actually line the end of Rogue One with that is pretty impressive. So yeah, it was just really fun, and I was able to get my kid to stop watching YouTube for a while to do it.
Did you see that thing where they had a screening of the unspecial edition, like at Lucasfilm, yeah, and the comments were like, "Man, this looks really like cheap and
yeah." What I didn't
terrible.
what I didn't know there's a great documentary on Disney Plus called Industrial Light and Magic, and it's 6 parts. George Lucas tinkered with it almost immediately after it was released, and he kept on messing with it until what it is now.
So there's really no not special edition ever?
There is, yeah, really
since,
no.
Since 1977, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of fascinating that he's always been that way. And, I mean, it's his stuff. He can do what he wants with it. I don't care. The heart of it
belongs to the fans.
The heart of it's still there. You know, you can't... Yeah, is it distracting when they have 1997 CGI in a scene that wasn't before? But there is scenes when Luke and Obi-Wan Kenobi go just before they get into the cantina and they have all those new animals out about. It does give the scene more
life. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's tough. I mean, the Greedo shooting Han is really awkwardly edited. I take the good with the bad. And what I really miss about it, again, I mentioned it, is the practical effects. All the creatures are freaking awesome when they're in the cantina and stuff. So, yeah, there's that. And my kid really liked it, so it was fun. And the last thing I watched this week is I saw Together, which is Alison Brie and Dave Franco.
I saw that.
That's all right. I always love that Alison Brie. I really always really like her in movies or TV shows. And Dave Franco is fun. You know, it really lost me. I guess not lost me is not the right word. It's still cool. But when they started explaining what was happening to them, I kind of lost interest. Because the opening's really cool with the dogs and shit.
I've actually forgot most of the details of the movie.
So,
like, I know the overall plot, but
yeah. So, you know, it's the water that's underneath the ground, and I like when Dave Franco goes to look for those missing hikers, and he finds them. They're all basically like the substance where they're all just morphed into one another, and yeah, it's. I mean, the performances are great, and there's some great body horror in it. It is a good movie.
But what was the plot around like their relationship though?
He wouldn't have sex with her, because his parents died.
Okay.
His dad died and his mom was sleeping with his corpse in the bedroom, and he went to check on him. And it kind of fucked him up. And so he wanted nothing to do with being intimate with Alison Brie. And so when he gets kind of infected, or they both get infected with that tainted water, he really wants her again. And they can't keep their hands off because they're being like
forced together. Yeah. That's right.
So it's, and you know, there's some creepy parts, you know, when he finds the nest of rats that are all dead and decomposing. And she asks him how he knew where that was. He says, because of the smell of my dad being dead in the bed and my mom just sitting there with him. So there's some creepy things in it.
You can smell that smell, right?
No. I can tell you it's the worst thing you can ever smell. I mean, I'll tell you a story after this podcast. That happened last week in the future. That's what I watched this week.
You know, I keep forgetting to talk about like from 4 weeks ago is I saw the Stranger Things finale in the theater.
Did you really? Had you ever seen the show?
Well, I watched seasons 1 through 3. I don't know if I watched 4. I definitely didn't watch 5. not because I didn't want to, because I just don't have Netflix. But I feel like I get where it was going. Hmm. So I just went and saw the finale. Watched the ending.
Were you right?
Generally, yeah. Like, I never really felt right or wrong. I was just like, okay, this is a conclusion.
I think the last episode I saw, because Kellen really got into it maybe 3 years ago, was when Sean Astin dies.
Well, that's like season two, I think. Yeah,
because he's in the hospital or something.
Yeah.
Or those monsters kill him. That's the last thing I remember.
That was
10 years ago,
season
probably.
Two? Yeah. That's a lot of, again, like, there's five seasons, so you've missed.
But they don't put them out every year. There's like a gap, right?
Well, one, two, and three were pretty close together, but four and five, yeah, have been like spread out. But I'll just say, like, I've said it before, they should just show episodes of TV in the theater because I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, as a finale, too, like, I enjoyed it. I know the internet hates it, but I felt it wrapped up the characters really well, and I almost cried at the end scene.
Hey, well, then they did it.
When they're doing their D&D game. Like, it felt like an appropriate wrap-up for everything, and it was a smart way to, like, explain some stuff away.
You know, as a creator of something like that, just like Star Wars or anything, it's probably really hard. I think you just want to find something that's true to the characters, because you're not going to make everybody happy.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when How I Met Your Mother ended and people lost their fucking mind. But the ironic thing is, and this is where people don't remember, is because that show went on for 9 years, 11 years, a really long time. But they filmed all the stuff with his kids in the first two or three seasons because of the age, obviously, because they were, I think, like 15, 16 when they did it. So, you know, 10 years and you're 26, you're going to look way different. So they actually had the ending because the kids are in the last episode and they say what happens. So this is, they were going to do this ending no matter what. And people have this, and I get it. They love characters and they have these connections to them, but sometimes all the time, it's not up to you. And I always try to remind myself every time they do something weird in Spider-Man comics, I go, man, that's not who Spider-Man is. But I tell myself, if I wait 6 months, they're going to change. Peter Parker will come back. No matter what happens, Pete will be back. So, but I think if you have an idea, just run with it. And I mean, I'm interested. I'll probably watch them.
But yeah, I also felt like I, without having watched whatever 12 episodes leading up to that episode, like, I don't feel like I needed them. So that's probably not good, but.
Or is it good that they still are able to entertain you without all that stuff?
Everything is explained in a single episode, yeah. I mean, it was like a two-hour episode, too, so breathe a bit. Also, Winona Ryder's You Fucked With the Wrong Family moment was amazing. So,
love it.
Yeah. It's been nagging me. Like, I keep forgetting to talk about it. Like, again, they should show, you know, the Andor in the theater. Like, we should go watch whole seasons of shows in the theater.
Yeah, especially when they're that epic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, obviously probably not like The Office or something. But well, I mean, I would.
I'd still go see it.
But yeah, reserve it for something like with a spectacle, like, I don't know, Game of Thrones or something. Deadwood. I don't know. Really theatrical stuff.
Hell yeah.
Every Star Wars, every Marvel show.
Yeah, oh, that'd be sweet. Next week is the return of my favorite director, Brad. You are releasing. No, I'm just kidding.
My movie?
Yeah, no. Sam Raimi is back with Send Help, which I'm really excited. When I saw the trailer for it, it feels like a Sam Raimi movie.
It's crazy that that's like the first thing he's done since Oz the Great and Powerful, right?
Was Drag Me to Hell after Oz?
It was before.
Was it? 2013. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he doesn't. You know, when you,
I mean, he's done producing and stuff.
Yeah, he helps a lot of up and coming. I mean, his Evil Dead stuff now. But he also got paid $40 million not to make Spider-Man 4. So, he did Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Oh, duh.
So was that 20?
That's not his thing, though. Like, it's his movie, but
his style's in it. But yeah.
It's his first original.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In a long time.
Well, it's his first original since Drag Me to Hell. Because even Oz, the Great and Powerful, is definitely not his.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm excited. I love Sam Raimi.
Yeah, it's good.
Till next time, we'll see you in the theater. A real nerd knows who shot a real nerd. Can follow the plot and a real nerd. We'll give it all the gods. Lights, camera, action. Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it!